world. I'm John Batchelor. Ships. Enough ships to deal with two oceans. That's always been the challenge for the United States Navy. Where are the platforms? Where are the ships of the future? Once upon a time, the U.S. fielded the greatest fleet ever assembled off the coast of Normandy and then in the Pacific in order to defeat two empires, the German Empire and the Japanese Empire. Now, many years later, the geography is the same, the oceans are the same, but the challenge is the Chinese Communist Empire. What is to be done? I welcome Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy retired aviator at the Sagamore Institute, the author of the very helpful To Provide and Maintain a Navy, Why Naval Primacy is America's First Best Strategy. These last years, we've been discussing, Jerry and I, what needs to be done, and often it's shorthanded by Congress and by the media, myself, as a number of ships. How many do we need? 355, 495. However, we're going to turn now to something beyond ships, which is shipbuilding. Part of our conversation has been the need to balance the domestic scene, domestic politics in the U.S., and our foreign allies who have shipbuilding capabilities. I underline the fact that right now we have conversation just fresh between the Philippines, Japan, and the United States about defense of East Asia. Heretofore, there's been a gathering of three eagles in Camp David, the Prime Minister, the President of South Korea, Mr. Yoon, the Prime Minister of Japan, Mr. Kishida, and the President of the United States. There's more to talk about. There's AUKUS, Australia, the U.S., and the U.K. New Zealand's interested. They're all interested, but we need ships. Jerry, a very good evening to you. Ships and shipbuilding. Your recommendation in the Asia Times is for a Ships Act. What will it look like, and what about the Balancing Act? Good evening to you, Captain.
Good evening, John, and thank you again for having me on to talk to your very well-informed audience about these important topics, because they are global in scale, global in terms of the economy that we have built and fostered over the last 70 years, and global in their implications, to where if we see a breakdown in this globalized trade network that we've all worked so hard to build, that it really has huge implications in terms of inflation and disruptions in the economy. So getting at the idea of this global structure and also the Navy that is required to protect it, I think is one of the most crucial issues of our modern day.
The Ships Act aims at Congress, spending a great deal of money. However, you've always identified to me, Jerry, that we don't have enough welders. We don't have enough shipyards. We certainly don't have right now momentum to construct or renovate shipyards that once upon a time existed. The Congress certainly sees this. Do they have an answer before we go overseas?
Well, I think that they are working on that answer now. The idea of a Ships Act in line with what we saw 2 years ago with the Chips Act, the idea of reshoring a key industrial manufacturing capability back here to the United States, I think is growing in the conversation as well as is broadening across both parties right now. When we think about the Chips Act, we recognize that the idea of being completely dependent or are very, to a large degree, dependent upon foreign manufacturer of microchips, which go into everything from our automobiles to our refrigerators. We saw huge, significant disruptions in manufacturing during the COVID pandemic. And so we began to recognize that there was, in fact, a strategic vulnerability there. And the Congress, under the leadership of Senator Todd Young of Indiana and Chuck Schumer of New York, created this bipartisan act to try to reshore, to move chip manufacturing back here in the United States. In many ways, I'm looking for a Ships Act that does something very similar, that we recognize that since 1981, when we pulled subsidies from our commercial shipbuilding force, that we saw it dwindle away to the point where today all we have really is naval shipbuilders. We don't have the commercial shipbuilders that we used to have in this country. And that workforce was one of the things that helped to support the Navy in a crisis, that we could always draw upon the commercial side when we got into a national security type crisis. Today, when we don't have that commercial workforce there, We have nothing to fall back on. And so today, when the Congress adds more money and says to industry, we need you to build more ships, we find that we're pressing down on the gas pedal of this great engine, and we're finding that it's not going any faster because there's just not additional workforce there. So I think this CHIPS Act, or SHIPS Act that I'm talking about, is something that gets at a number of different pillars: workforce, modernizing the shipyards that we do have, that are rather small, medium to small at this point, bringing them up in terms of their industrial capabilities. Looking at the operating preferences, this is a small arcane part of the law which determines how much of a cargo or how many cargoes that go in and out of U.S. ports have to be carried on U.S. hulls. This is often called the Jones Act. We need to relook at that to see if we can rebalance that in favor of U.S. markets and U.S. shipbuilders. And then, of course, the idea of direct orders. You know, the U.S. Navy's Military Sealift Command has got 44 ships in it, four of which are locked inside the Port of Baltimore right now and can't get out. But that entire Military Sealift Command fleet of 44 ships is rather old. I think its average age is in the mid-30s. It's all going to need to be recapitalized. And so we have this opportunity of a generation to make an investment and have a ready customer there to build all types of ships, from logistical ships, commercial ships, all the way up to Navy ships.
And the Navy, Jerry, is it ready also? Is it increasing its training? Is it growing its fleet size, personnel? Is it bringing on the administrators and the offices you need to build more ships more quickly? Is that happening?
Well, John, if anything, I think that the naval bureaucracy that oversees shipbuilding is, in fact, too large right now. There are some 83,000 civilians who work at the Naval Sea Systems Command at the Washington Navy Yard and across the entire naval shipbuilding system. I think that's become very large. It's become calcified. It hasn't. It doesn't move quickly or in an innovative way. They try to take new ideas and fit them into old molds. And so one of the things I wrote about at National Review Online last week was the idea that we're going to need a reorganization and reform of Naval Sea Systems Command to allow them to learn once again how to go fast when it comes to technology, innovation, ship design. You know, I'm not sure that we're ready to move to this next generation of unmanned, small, medium, and large unmanned subsurface vehicles, surface vehicles, as well as aerial vehicles. And that one of the holdups there is actually with Naval Sea Systems Command. John, there was a report that came out from the Secretary of the Navy just over a week ago, almost a week and a half now, where he laid out 10 major shipbuilding programs that the U.S. Navy is currently doing right now, five of which are more than a year behind schedule, two of which were, in fact, 3 years behind schedule. This is a disaster, and although industry has a role to play with that, the shipbuilders that we have now, they've had some issues with COVID and manpower and personnel and training and automation. But a lot of the issues come down to what we call ship alts, or ship alterations, major changes in the design that have been imposed by Naval Sea Systems Command. We have to get away from that.
What is the hurry? I don't want to go past that, Jerry, because your piece has alarming details. If an American warship, say an Arleigh Burke, you note that we have 73 of them, and two-thirds are in the Pacific. If an Arleigh Burke is damaged in some fashion, hitting something or something goes awry, it has to get to, what did I say this correctly, Guam or the Hawaiian Islands or all the way home to the U.S. Is that correct?
That is correct. So when we think about where we can, there's two different aspects of the ship industry. One is ship building. I'm going to take a ship and build it from the keel up. The other thing place is I'm going to ship repair. So a ship's been damaged, I need to bring it in someplace, I need to patch up the holes, put new equipment on board it, rewire it, install new combat systems if they've been badly shattered. Those types of things happen in repair yards. And right now, we have a real scarcity of repair yards, specifically in the Western Pacific. Now, we do have some yards we can access in Japan, but quite frankly, John, you know and I know that most of those yards fall under the missile range umbrella of the Chinese. So in a hypothetical war with China, you know, Japan's probably not where I want to take my ships back for repair. which means that Guam is my fallback. Beyond that is Hawaii, which is 2 weeks away from Western Pacific by normal steaming. And then the West Coast of the United States, which is 3 weeks away by normal steaming. I think that we need to make, and I mentioned in that article in the Asia Times, that we need to be looking at some of these federated states of Micronesia, or for that matter, some of our other allies and partners in the region like Australia, to see if we can make some investment there on ship repair yards. But my Ships Act, which would cover part of that, but is largely focused on new ship construction. And I think that we have to find some sort of a balance there between us and our allies and partners on where we will build our new ships going forward.
What is to be done? Jerry Hendricks, Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy retired aviator at the Sagamore Institute, to provide and maintain a Navy, as Jerry's book very carefully identifying what is needed. We know what we need. We know what the threat is. We know what the risk is, why naval primacy is America's first best strategy. It might be our only strategy at this point. When we come back, what is to be done? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.